I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, amongst other things. Mr. Gerardo Del Rio here with my partner, Senor Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, again, amongst other things. This is the 354th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk gold. We're going to talk silver. We're going to talk copper. We're going to talk markets, and we're going to talk Mr. Hodge goes to city council, kind of. But first and foremost, Senor Hodge, how goes you today, sir?
I'm doing muy bien, Gerardo. I hope the same for you and yours. The State of the Union and the portfolios are strong, apparently. And apologies for last week. I was set to go it alone and was having some internet issues. My Starlink crapped out. It has been replaced. So sorry for missing last week, but you wouldn't have had yourself here anyway. It would have been just me. So welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm healthy. The boys are healthy. My youngest got accepted into an art college. That was his first choice. So our baby will be going away to college this August. The wife still loves me. The weather is beautiful out here. It's 85 degrees and sunny. Things are great. I'm excited to get into it this week. I missed last week. I was in Costa Rica for a few days. As you mentioned, I wouldn't have made it last week anyhow, despite the technical issues, even if you hadn't had the technical issues. But happy to be back at it this week and definitely want to make sure that we give people their money's worth. Look, we've been broken records, and I suspect we're going to be broken records again this week. We've said buy the dips on the precious metals, buy the dips on copper, buy the dips on quality juniors, developers, and well-managed producers. The area where I dabble the least in is the producer area, but all of that has proven to be prudent advice. So when I look at gold at $5,200 and I look at silver at $89 and I look at copper at $5.95 on the spot price, uranium near $90, all seems to be exactly the way we thought it would be. Any thoughts on the state of the commodity market? I'm going to run through it because, again, I don't think much has changed since 2 weeks ago when we told you to buy the dip.
Always have thoughts. From the macro perspective, we've been talking about how rates were coming down and the dollar had been weak. I showed you the chart with TRUMP going down on the dollar and was telling you that the 10-year was softening because growth was going to soft, that it was going to soften. It was still going to be positive, but it was going to be soft. And sure enough, you had GDP come out for Q4 at just 1.4, 1.5% thereabouts. At the same time, inflation continues to fall as well, which, believe the unbelievable or not, as Mr. Dines used to say, but the January CPI print came out, below expectations as well. So that's led to a softening of rates. The market has started to understand that it's going to get rate cuts in the second half of this year once we get rid of Jerome Powell, which nobody's even talking about anymore. And that allowed gold to go back to $5,200 and silver to near 90, as you say. The debt keeps going up. And gold was making new highs commensurate with new highs in the S&P. And now it might get tailwinds because money's coming out of the broader indices, especially the tech names. I'm sure you've seen and we've talked about AI is going to take all the jobs. Software is dead. Law firms are dead. Bloomberg's dead. All the things are dead. We're back to killing things. But the precious metals look really good. Copper is consolidated nicely, is back above $6. So a lot to like on the copper space. Maybe I'll talk about more rare earths in a second. And uranium fundamentally is amazing. The last couple of prints I saw were just a tiny bit of a pullback on the spot price to, I don't know, 88 or something dollars might have been the last I saw. So some opportunities there as I look across the uranium complex, and maybe we'll talk more about that later as well.
Yeah, no, look, I think there's an opportunity in the lithium gold space we'll talk about in the premium portion of the podcast. We'll also have a solid discussion on share structure and why it matters and why I think there's a heck of an opportunity in that space right now. There's a uranium opportunity I know that both you and I are shareholders of that is a screaming bargain that has a lot of resemblance to another uranium company that we highlighted a couple of months back that was sitting at the 20, 22, 23 cent level and currently is sitting, some 80% above that price. Similar setup for the company we'll talk about in the premium portion of the podcast. You touched on rare earths. I want to get back to jurisdictional risk. We're going to talk Mexico a bit here in a bit. But look, China once again has decided, and this is just going to be the policy, right? They're going to weaponize its monopoly on the processing of rare earths as it relates especially to the heavies, which is the stuff that we need for the satellites, the missiles, the bombs, all the stuff that we're going to use on Iran for no reason other than Israel wants us to. And again, no shade. Before I get the anti-Semitic letters and emails and all of that, love the Jewish people, love my Israeli people, love all good people. I am not a fan of governments, and I sure in the heck am not a fan of wars that we can't afford on foreign land, on a country that poses absolutely zero threat to us. So let me make my position clear. That extends across the board. It was the same way when Obama was in office and was bombing the heck out of the Middle East. It was the same way when Bush Senior was in Iraq. It was the same way when Bush Junior was in the Middle East. I'm consistent across all fronts. I don't switch that up for any government or people. So take that as you will. I say all that to say jurisdiction matters. Geopolitical turbulence is continuing to escalate. I don't think a war is going to do anything to dissuade that. Thoughts on the rare earth weaponization that we're seeing from China?
I mean, you say they're going to weaponize and they're going to monopolize, but they have weaponized and they have monopolized. So this is the broken record part.
Yeah.
You know, I included a meme or a tweet in Underground Alpha a couple of weeks ago. It was this guy who went on a date, and I guess the woman left during the date because he was talking about how China's monopolized all the critical metals. And he says, well, at least, you know, there's not going to be a second date, but at least she knows now that China's monopolized the rare and critical metals. And I was telling my wife the same thing. I was like, aren't you tired of hearing me talk about the Chinese monopolization? And it's ongoing and it's not gotten any better. I mean, we're starting to throw money at the problem, but money doesn't translate immediately into new resources and extraction, which is what you and I have been saying for years.
Correct. It's
a very long time to find, identify, permit, prove up, fund, build, extract these metals. And it's why I think we're expecting a commodity cycle that's going to have some legs here. So the latest news, and I was just reading this today, I've got it right up here in front of me now, so I might read from it, is an exclusive from Reuters saying that suppliers to U.S. aerospace and semiconductor firms, read between the lines there, military for people that need that shit, are facing worsening rare earth shortages, with some clients even being turned away. And then it goes on to say that this comes before U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to meet Mr. Xi at a summit in Beijing. We'll see how that goes. But they're talking about the heavies, as you say, the yttriums, the scandiums, and not a lot of places to get that. So we need to secure our supply chain. I mean, all the things that we've been saying, we need to expedite the permitting process that is happening. And again, expecting this to play out for a number of years. I guess I'll drop a freebie early. I've been talking about this company called Kotek. It's actually been exactly 2 years. I was writing the letter today. It was February 26th, 2024, when we entered the position. We're up over 200%. That's 100% a year if you can divide by two.
Well done, sir. Take
correct. And they haven't. But the punchline is they haven't built anything yet, right? I mean, they've their partner who produces the rare earths from recycled hard drives, they're doing that in Europe, but the plant hasn't been built here in the U.S. It's at the feasibility stage. They secured the site, they secured the feedstock, but you know, they're still a year or two away from getting that off the ground and built. And so it's still opportunity there. It now has a market cap of a couple of $100 million. And so do with that what you will, but there's going to be other opportunities because they can't supply it all, and MP Materials can't supply it all. And so there's going to be other names that are going to have to be in the mix there. And there's going to be more capital that's going to need to be deployed in the rare earth sector. And it's not just the rare earths, right? I think there's some 60 some names on the critical minerals list at this point, including copper and uranium. So a lot to like in the space, a lot of work still to do, and a lot of gains still to be made, I believe.
Now, listen, speaking of a lot of work to do, we've had a pretty successful run. I mean, frankly, just in general, but especially the last you know, 3, 4, 5 years, even during bear markets. But I want to be absolutely clear to everybody that Nick and I are going to keep busting our behinds to bring early ideas with proven teams, with proven assets, or teams that can go get assets at valuations that don't involve you chasing a stock higher just because it's the it thing. I have several positions that are up quite a bit that are mature positions. I've had them for years and it's paid off for subscribers and myself, but it's time to start rotating capital. It's time to start taking some profits on some of the positions in the portfolio. So I say that to say a couple of things. One, I have a new pick for JRS in the next week or two. I have a new pick for JRM in the next week or two. And we have, Nick and I have a new deal that we likely will be financing sometime next week that is going to be, I think, one of the most exciting exploration, gold, silver exploration stories in the Yukon. So stay tuned for that. We are getting down to, what do we got, 55, 60 slots now left for PPI. And then the doors and the books are closed. And again, that's not a marketing gimmick, folks. Like, we can only take down, we can only take in so many subscribers because we can only take down so much of the financings that were taken. So if we're doing early stage deals, that typically means $2, 3, 4, 5 million that we're raising for these companies to get you a decent and proper allocation. Any more than 250 subscribers doesn't allow for you to get your money's worth. We want to make sure that people that are subscribing to that service get their money's worth. So expect that here in the next week. I say all that to say we're busy as all heck and we're not resting on our laurels. We're working hard to make sure that the performance not just keeps up, but continues to accelerate in this, what I think is going to be the most historic and consequential commodities bull market that I've ever seen and likely will ever see. And knock on wood that I see another one or two, but this one I think is definitely going to be one for the ages. Off to a heck of a start, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just touch on the Yukon for a second and give some color and maybe some information. I had two calls today with CEOs of Yukon-based, Yukon-led explorers, and I saw antimony in both of their slide decks. no surprise. And, you know, the last deal we funded was a gold antimony deal that was severely oversubscribed, and those stories are resonating with people. The Yukon is coming on in a very strong way. I mean, go look at companies like Snowline Gold and look at that stock chart and look at that market cap. Go look at
Banyan.
Well, I was going to get there. I'll go there now. Just look at Banyan. And you know, we've had Terra on Resource Stock Digest. I've been a shareholder on and off of Banyan for a number of years, and it's been a recommendation. They're starting to find some high-grade stuff there. And that stock's done really, really well. I think Sitka put out a resource estimate this week, looking good. They've got a change in government over the past couple of months that's very mining friendly. The infrastructure is there. They have power. There's a coffee, the coffee deposit, which will tie this this upcoming private placement intel to. It was found by a gentleman named Sean Ryan back in the day. That's now being built and ushered into production by a company called Fuerte Metals. And so it was only two and a half, three years ago there where the Yukon was partially being written off. There was an unfortunate disaster at Victoria Gold's Eagle Mine Complex where there was a slide in the leach pad and some chemicals were released. But at the end of the day, there's not much else to do in the Yukon except for mine. And so if they want a robust economy and if the First Nations or the Indigenous want jobs and payments and royalties and skin in some sort of growth industry, it's got to be mining. And you can see that it's bounced back in a very strong way. There's other companies that we're involved in that have been putting out great results in the Yukon, and there's a lot to like up there. So as you say, the next placement we'll be doing will be out in the next couple of days. And they just acquired or optioned a property that's in the Yukon. That press release was out today. And I suspect the financing will be announced in very short order.
Quick note on gold and silver prices. Many of you that are new, and thank you, the audience keeps growing, so we appreciate it, right? I laugh because I still can't believe people pay and dedicate time to hear us talk. But we do appreciate it, and we're thankful, and we try to get you your information's worth. But I say all that to say for anyone that's looking at the gold and silver price or at the copper price or at the uranium price and going, man, I'm new to the space. I see all these companies in the portfolio that are up 100%, 50%, 500%, 1,000%. You pick your percentage. They're all over the place. And you're thinking you missed it. We are in the early stages. I'm a huge baseball fan, right? And a huge boxing fan as well. If we're talking baseball parlance, we're in the third inning. If we're talking boxing, we're probably in the second round, right, of a 10-round fight or the third round of a 12-round fight. So there is a lot of game and a lot of fight left in this bull market. Nick and I's job is to find stories, preferably early on, preferably pre-discovery, with exceptions, if we can find value, and we'll talk value later. But if we can find stories pre-discovery with seasoned teams, good share structures, advantageous valuations, and provide those deals to you, then that's how you maximize profits in this market. So we're going to keep doing that, and hopefully you keep joining us. And again, hopefully you get your money's worth. I encourage all of you to continue to write in. We love the questions. We love the feedback, the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between. Anything to add to that, Mr. Hodge?
Yeah, I do. We've been talking about buy under prices. We've been talking about volatility. I was talking about a couple of weeks ago how some subscribers were phoning in to Jimmy and member services and saying what you just said. There's nothing to buy. Everything's above the buy under price that you recommend. And I was telling Jimmy, just tell him to wait a little bit. We're either going to experience some volatility that they're going to get buying opportunities, or, you know, we'll end up raising the buy under prices or come up with new recommendations, right? That's sort of how it goes. Lo and behold, we did have some volatility, which you and I talked about. I chronicled the GVZ, the gold volatility, on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, which is still elevated, by the way, up around 30. If you just equate that to like the VIX, a VIX at 30 would be relatively high. Gold volatility is at 30 is relatively high, and it's why you can get these swings. You didn't ask me for levels this week, but I wrote them down. You know,
I silver, was going to.
silver just in the next couple of weeks could go down to $75 and still be bullish. And at the same time, you shouldn't be surprised to see it at $95. That's a $20 swing that could occur in a matter of days, and it would still be bullish just as a function of that raised volatility. That gold is something like $49.50 up to $5,300. It could swing by $300, $350, and you shouldn't shite your panties because it does that. It's just the when volatility rises, prices swing more. And so we did get some dips in gold, and we did get some dips in equities. And one I mentioned here on this very podcast, I won't name it now because not quite fair to everybody who pays, but I was saying I was buying shares at $3.25, and that was like 3 weeks ago. It's a $4.25 stock today, right? And there's many examples of that across the board. So stick to those limit prices. Seek the guidance from Gerardo and myself right into member services, and look at the portfolios. Those exist as a tab in the premium portfolio, in the premium publications, for a reason. And I know you and I both have. I think you might call them buy limits or buy up twos, and I call them buy unders. Yeah. And you can see if the stock is at or below that price, you should be buying. And so set a limit order. If you don't know what that means, write in and ask, or phone in and ask. But that's the way you secure positions. You embrace volatility. You use it to your advantage, and are able to get shares while the rest of the world is freaking out. I know you're going to talk about one later. And maybe I'm just blowing a little hot air now because I'll mention one later as well. But, you know, I had to buy one today. I had to phone up Schwab. They wouldn't let me buy it because it's a foreign security. And I placed the limit order. There was some weakness going on. And my order filled in like 2 hours. And had like 2 or 3 month lows for this stock. So a lot of opportunities still out there. Know what you own. Stick to those buy limit prices, and don't freak out is what I'm learning as my beard and the corner of my Tulsi Gabbard hair gets more gray. The world is not going to end, although there's lots of volatility, but both politically and in the market. We'll talk about some of that in a bit, but it does always go on. The sun always rises, and at least in the resource space, we are squarely in a bull market for a litany of reasons that you and I cover day in and day out. And the cream is really starting to rise to the top, and you and I have shameless plug done a pretty good job at separating that and finding what the cream is.
Now, listen, folks, again, for those of you that may be newer, I tend to be the optimist and Nick tends to be a little bit more conservative. When Nick Hodge tells you it's a bull market and that we're in the thick of it, we are in the thick of it, baby. We got ourselves a bull market for the ages. Use it to your advantage. Use the volatility to your advantage. Everything Nick said, right? Don't chase stocks and continue to look for value. It gets harder as the bull market matures. Again, do your own due diligence. We're going to keep doing our own due diligence and sharing that with you. But those are good basics. I had a subscriber write in and say, man, it's funny. It was actually, I think, a similar subscriber that had written in before about things being at all-time highs. And then a couple of weeks later, we had a little bit of a pullback in a few names. And he wrote in and said, well, Gerardo, like things are 20% off all-time highs. Like, what do you think about this market? Like, I think it's great. I love buying stuff that's on sale. I much prefer stuff that I know I'm going to hold when I know what I own, know why I own it, and the thesis is still playing out. If it goes on sale, that's fantastic for me. That means I get to buy it at a cheaper price. So pullbacks are healthy, folks. Things are not supposed to go straight up. You're supposed to have corrections. We'll talk share structure a bit later on with a specific example on that. That's a big holding in my portfolio. But again, opportunities are all over the place. There is no need to chase stuff. Jurisdictional risk. You talked about the Yukon and what a great, great jurisdiction that is to operate in. Got to talk Mexico again, right? We talked about this a few weeks ago with the unfortunate kidnapping and likely killing of, 10 miners / geologists in central northern Mexico and northern Mexico in that case. And now we have a situation in central northern Mexico that, again, hits home. My mom is in that region, like dead smack in the middle of it. And look, the bottom line is a major, major cartel head figure and his leadership was captured and subsequently killed, died from his wounds. And anytime I've seen this happen in Mexico several times, I've been there in the middle of one of these changes. Anytime that happens, what you tend to get is you tend to get one of two things. You get a power vacuum where the individual group splits up and is vying for power. And that's never, it's not a Zoom meeting, folks. That tends to be very bloody and it tends to be very consequential, not just for the people involved, but for the people around. And we'll see if that plays out. The other thing that tends to happen is, the group names a successor immediately that everybody can get around and really goes after defending what's perceived weakness from the other groups that are going to attack it, because it's a vulnerable situation to be in when your number one, your number two, and a lot of the head guys are taken out by the Mexican military. Let's be clear, for better or worse, Mexico's corruption has been absolutely horrible, but this was a Mexican military operation guided likely, admittedly by U.S. intel. But the boots on the ground and the people that bled and the people that killed were Mexican military. So whatever side of the thing you're on, this is a drastic shift in Mexican policy from this president. I'm not going to get out here and get into the ins and the outs and the corruption and how they couldn't tell the state police about this operation and they couldn't tell the state governor. And that was the only reason they were able to pull it off to find this guy. That likely tells you who's on the take and who's not. But the fact that the president gave the green light for this operation in this part of the country with this type of consequence is a major, major shift in policy that in central northern Mexico will have deep, deep ramifications. That's not just for anyone involved in that life or in that sector. It's for anyone in the region. So I would encourage caution. I don't want to be an alarmist, but I have tons of family down there. I have people near and dear to my heart that are over there. The first couple of days were rough. The last couple of days, the reports that I have gotten firsthand are that things are eerily calm right now, which probably means, a reloading and a recalibration while these groups figure out the next move. But be absolutely clear, folks. Like I said 2 weeks ago, things can change in a day. Things changed in a day. And the only reason I think it got as many headlines as it did is because a lot of Americans and foreigners happen to be stuck in beautiful Puerto Vallarta and some of, the tourist destinations. Had it not been for that, I think you still get the headlines, but you don't get the coverage that we got here on the U.S. side of things. But be clear, look, it was funny. A gentleman that we know emailed us on a Sunday and he said, hey, I got approached. There's a project in my home state of Zacatecas that just came up for sale. they're near a producing mine. And oh, by the way, the producing mine is up for sale now too. And I wrote back and I said, hey, I'm from that area. Have you ever thought to wonder why a producing mine might be up for sale in a bull market with gold at 5,000 and silver at 88? That's a no-go zone for me when it comes to projects. There's projects that are quality projects there. Some of the bigger silver mines in the world are there. There's a difference between a major silver mine that has a multi-billion dollar market cap and knows how to operate and who to operate with, and has security protocols in place to deal with the locals, and an exploration company that's, you know, relying on maybe one or two people that may or may not even live there that are just familiar with the region and the customs. Be careful in choosing projects that are in hot regions, such as, and I hate to say, because again, it's where my family's from, Zacatecas and Jalisco are tough right now, folks. So just be careful out there. Not to say you can't work there, but I certainly will not be vacationing anytime soon and certainly will not be making any site visits there anytime soon. Northern Mexico, parts of it very different. You know, we have a project, I'll give y'all a freebie. Kingsman Resources continues to be my largest single personal silver holding. Will continue to be so for a long time. They're in, you know, a state that, you know, has the cartel influence, but it doesn't affect the project. It's in a mining region that's had decades of operations without issue. And so just very, very different politics. Real estate is local. Cartel violence is local. Extortion, murder, all of it is local. You have to know the politics in the region before you get involved in a place, folks. So that's my take on political jurisdiction and risk and geopolitical.
I have some follow-ups because you have deep connections there and I think are in a position to answer some of these follow-ups. So first, I am going. The family and I are going for Easter. Not to Puerto Vallarta, to the east side, to south of Cancun, that's called Akumal. Safe or not safe?
Not as safe as it was a week ago. Okay. I would definitely, we'll get together afterwards. You could send me a link to where it is you're going. Not as safe as it was a week ago, for the simple fact that that is one of the regions that, had some turbulence as a result of what happened with the guy that was killed and his leadership that was taken out. So we'll see. And again, that's fluid. That can change, you know, it in a day, right? So I'd be curious to see what the immediate follow up was specifically in the resort and the town that you're headed to. And then curious to see what the politics around it are. I'd also be curious to see how far the airport is from the resort, what the transport looks like. Is it resort provided? Is it a taxi? Is it, you know, all of those little things that you don't think you have to check boxes on, you especially should check boxes on right now.
Okay. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. We'll follow up with you.
Yeah.
You said they appoint a successor very quickly. I know the answer, but I'm wondering if you've seen anything about the appointment of a successor.
There's four or five names that are rumored to be next in line. And the question is, will those four or five names get together and draw sticks, right? And do it amicably? Or as often happens, right? Or will there be a situation where ego gets in the way and you know, you have two or three different people that each feel they should be the individual that takes the reins? And if that's the case, then there's going to be internal fighting to go along with the external fighting against not just the other cartels, but also the government, because you don't kill a guy like this and his leadership and just expect zero ramifications or pushback, whether that's the Marines, the Mexican military, or the other groups that are going to be poaching. So I'm as curious as everyone to see how that plays out. Traditionally, what's happened, and we've seen it with other groups, is there's a lot of infighting. You know, the money person tends to think they should be in charge, and the logistics person tends to think they know all the logistics, and you know, the person that's most prone to violence seems to think they're the ones that really get stuff done, and it can get real messy really quick. So I am curious to see how that plays out, and I think we'll know over the coming weeks and months.
What caught my eye was the stepson. Have you read anything about this? The stepson of El Mencho, an American citizen.
Correct.
And I want you to tie that into why these cartels are, at least in your opinion, why these cartels are having American weapons and defense level munitions, et cetera.
I've ranted about this since I think we started this, and you know, God, whenever we started this, 353 episodes ago, right? look, 80 to 90%, 80% likely. Give or take, pick a number. The majority of the weapons come from the U.S. A small portion of those weapons come from Israel. They're Israeli weaponry, right? And so there was, and I forget the name of it, Operation Something, during the Obama years, where the U.S. government straight up, you know, military personnel and agents got caught running guns to and from Mexico. And that wasn't an operation that was like an illegal, well, it was illegal, but it wasn't that they got caught doing something no one knew about. They just got caught doing it. That is the policy. You can't have the weaponry. Look, in my town where I grew up with a lot of these people, right? You can't not grow up. It's like growing up in Little Italy in Brooklyn or New York in the 30s and 40s and not knowing anybody that's involved in these things, right? You're just naturally going to grow up with people that end up becoming a teacher and some people that end up becoming cartel leaders. That's kind of the way that it goes. The weaponry that started showing up there in the early 2000s, it was absolute insanity, Nick. And people were having a field day with this stuff. They didn't know how to use half of it. So you mean to tell me that we went from good old fashioned, you know, street justice and the way that it used to be with weapons that, yes, high caliber and all of that. But we went from that to the stuff that we're seeing now. I mean, you look at some of these groups and they're straight up paramilitary groups. I mean, the guy that got killed and his leadership, he was a former head of a paramilitary group. Like he broke off from another group way back in the days in 2010, decided he was going to create his own outfit because they were more tactical, more organized, and obviously had access to the weaponry. So yes, absolutely. There, you know, when we talk about a cartel presence, because we get subscribers that write in worried about this stuff, I tell them, look, we have an organized crime presence in every state in the country. You know which neighborhoods you should be in. You know which things you shouldn't be doing at what hours of the night. Does that always insulate you? Absolutely not. Things still happen. But you know how to mitigate some of those risks. And look, there's... How can I say this without saying it? If anyone believes that there isn't educated, coordinated, structured cartel presence in the United States from... not just Mexico, but many other regions of the world, Europe, you name it, we can go on, then you're naive, right? And money and corruption is always going to lead to protection. And if you don't believe that, then look at the Epstein files, where we're starting to see the fallout all around the world. And in the U.S., the best we can get is Larry Summers resigning. By the way, he's going to take his fucking time. He'll do it at the end of the year when he decides he's done. So if we can get away with killing, and trigger warning for everybody out there. Okay, here it comes. Killing, raping, and eating children, and have our Department of Justice and our FBI director get up on TV and say, there's nothing to see here. The investigation is closed. There will be no further arrest. It's a little murder and a little gun violence and, you know, a couple thousand tons of cocaine coming through to the U.S. to provide, you know, that the supply for the habit that exists in America, right? What's a little guns for cocaine exchange program between the U.S. and Mexico? Who's worried about that? If we can't even get an arrest for these guys that were doing this to babies and girls and kids and boys.
You did that beautifully. That's exactly how I wanted you to tie it together. I knew you would. Well done, sir. It was called Operation Fast and Furious. I Googled while you were talking. Funny, not funny, because it's ongoing, like that stupid movie series that just won't die. We just keep giving them weapons. And interesting that some come from Israel as well. Also interesting that you're now anti-Semitic if you want to keep pursuing the Epstein files and those involved. Also interesting that there was a former prime minister of Israel wrapped up in those files, and I don't know if we're going to make the full transition to Bizarro World yet, but on down the line to the World Economic Forum president now out, to top lawyer at Goldman Sachs now out, to former president of the most prestigious university in the United States of America now out. And so put on or take off your tinfoil hat, however you want to do it. But that's one of the most robust and entrenched financial institutions in the world, one of the leading educational institutions in the world. And one of the countries who seems to have the ear of the largest military in the world, that is the United States, no matter if it's a gentleman with a blue or red tie who is controlling that military yeah. at any given time. So welcome to Bizarro World. I got myself a sweatshirt.
Nice sweatshirt. The president today of the world, like the whole world, guys, the World Economic Forum resigned today over his ties with Mr. Epstein. Bill Gates, good old Bill, just remembered, shit, I did have a couple of affairs with some Russian prostitutes. Oopsie doopsie, I forgot about those.
She was a bridge player, Gerardo.
Who had her tuition played by Jeffrey Epstein and was compensated with interest by Mr. Bill Gates. Isn't that interesting? There's a word for that, y'all. It's called trafficking and money laundering. I don't know when the Law and Order Party forgot about law and forgot about order, but we're clearly past that point. And I cannot wait to have Rudy on here on March the 5th. So much has happened. He is one of my favorite follows on X, formerly Twitter, Rudy Havenstein. I can't wait to have him on and get his take. He's been on this along with Whitney Webb, you know, just diligently nonstop for over a decade. And you know, even he says he is just appalled by some of the stuff that has been made public. And then think about this, folks. That's not even half of what's out there. Like, this is like the small batch. This is the stuff that they thought we could take. It's absolute bizarro world out there, man. Protect your kids, folks. Little president of the school, little president of the church, little president of whatever the heck. Titles don't mean nothing. These dudes will take your kids and do all sorts of nasty stuff to them. So watch your kids out there and stay vigilant. And I don't care who's in office. I'm not letting this issue go. We're whatever little bit I can use my little platform to scream and shout about how nasty and how much this is the single biggest scandal in American history. I'm absolutely going to continue to do that because it absolutely is. There's no amount of money or military or wars or deaths even to me that top what happened here, and we don't even know the half of it.
No, and I'll keep going. I mean, there was a gentleman named Richard Axel who was the head of a neuroscience department at Columbia University, another Ivy League respected institution, right? Who had to step down. And again, there shouldn't be stepping down. There should be firings, and there should be arrests. And I think there's more to come. We're learning this week that I forget the word that the Wall Street Journal used, but it was thoroughly Orwellian newspeak that, you know, there's a snafu where there was an incorrect non-disclosure of some files related to Trump that now they have to go back and see if there's more stuff that they have to release. Yeah, I'm sure it was inadvertent, right? I mean, that's as Orwellian as it gets. And then you got, and this is both sides, right? This is Trump. This is Trump's FBI. This is Trump's Justice Department and known about since when Obama was in office. They gave that guy a peace prize, by the way, for
bombing brown people in the Middle East. Record bombing of brown people.
Fast and furious. And five Muslim nations were bombed. And then Hillary gets up there today and says, oh, I'm not about this guy. I had no idea what he was doing. I never had any relationship with this guy. And we've seen the pictures, Hillary, like, fucking Ghislaine was at your daughter's wedding. I mean, like, I don't, what are you trying to tell us? It's coming, I don't know if it's coming to an end, but the wool over the eyes of the American people has definitely been pulled back on this one, and I don't think they're going to let it go. So there's a reason Massey has gotten the donations. I see people, you were talking about donating to him. I saw Rick was talking about donating to Thomas Massey. I don't know how you have any faith in either side of the political spectrum in the United States, and especially after watching the State of the Union this week. I know you didn't watch it. I paid a little bit of attention, but just appalling, the state of politics and the state of entrenched partisanship that leads people to say just total spewed bullshit. Like, whether it's whoever it is, like the person that's rebutting the State of the Union or the sycophant GOP Republican senators and congressmen that tell you and their constituents how great that speech was the next day. It's like, y'all are just toeing the line. And it's so obvious that it makes me sick, right? And it makes me glad that I haven't voted for any of you for well over a decade, and that I've just insulated my little self here on my little cabin here. I was watching my son. He's home this week. He's outside riding around the driveway. He got his adenoids out, so he's got to stay home from school. I feel more blessed than ever, man, that to be able to provide that. And that ties back to the things we do in the market for sure.
Yeah. We're going to keep it to politics. You went to city council kind of this past week or week and a half. How was that experience?
Well, disheartening. I mean, I went the last time I went, as you know, and I'm in a good mood today, so I'm trying not to get riled up. But the last time I went was last summer when there was homeless in every nook and cranny, shitting on the streets, dildos outside my office door, hypodermic needles in parks, all kind of stuff, right? I mean, just rampant open-air drug dealing and petty crime that was tied back to these folks who have been arrested and cited multiple times. And the populace was fed up, and they had voted in favor 75% to make homeless camping illegal. You can't sleep on the sidewalk. You can't have a homeless encampment. And the mayor and the city council, by like a 5-2 vote, were saying, basically, we don't care what y'all think. We're bleeding hearts. We've got virtues to signal. We're progressive. And, you know, these people belong. We changed the motto to, in Spokane, we all belong. And then, like, 2 weeks later, after I went and spoke, and a lot of people went and spoke, like, it's not just me carrying this cross up there to City Hall. Like, there was dozens and dozens of people who said, look, man, we voted for this. This is what we want. Sure enough, they voted the opposite. I'm going to get long in the tooth here. Sorry. There was like a bit of a scandal, like some backroom texting from the mayor between multiple people. Pretty sure this one lady voted like the wrong way. And they ended up getting an ethics investigation, which I looked into this week. And there was no wrongdoing. Shockingly, Gerardo, there was nothing scandalous happened at that meeting that went until 1 a.m. And then 2 weeks later, a homeless guy stabbed somebody in the neck outside of City Hall and they died. And then the mayor and the city council decided that they should probably ban homeless camping, but not because it's what the people wanted, because people were getting stabbed to death on the street by homeless people outside. So flash forward to this week, and there's all sorts of stuff that goes on I don't have to talk about. But the reason I went this week is because now they're trying to change the rules. They want to change the rules of city council. So right now you've got 2 minutes. You can speak on any issue that's in front of the city council at that meeting for 2 minutes. So there's 20 issues. You can speak for 40 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes on every issue. They want to change it so that you've got to speak. If you want to speak, you got to speak in the beginning of the meeting, and you only get 3 minutes. No matter if you want to talk about 10 issues or not, you only get 3 minutes, which goes very fast. And so it's clearly a way to stifle public input and public opinion. Now, they say it's because the meetings go so long. Sure. And it's a way to let more people to speak. It's always in your benefit, right?
Sure,
when they
of course
propose
it
these things. This is for more transparency and openness. And the gut test, it doesn't pass, right? You're limiting the time. You're reducing the amount of time that can people speak on it, that people can speak on individual bills. And that's what got me sideways. That's why I went and talked. And I told them all the things. I actually got my notes here because I knew you were going to ask me. I told him that in Spokane, we all belong, except for when it's time to speak at city council meetings. Like, what the fuck is going on here? And so anyway, they're going to pass it. And oh, here's another part. So the city council was 3-2, progressive to conservative. One of those conservatives lost his seat by an open socialist who, and you learn things in life when you go and you show up. She was actually, I like the way she spoke. Like, her name is Sarah Digsit. She's a self-proclaimed democratic socialist. Made more sense than all the other progressives on the city council. And this was my takeaway. Her, the socialist, and the remaining conservative are the only two who are against limiting the time, changing the rules of the city council. And so it tells you something when the one conservative on the city council and the one all the way on the other end of the spectrum are the two who are saying, hey, wait a minute here. And it's just a microcosm of the entire complex. Now I'm going to take it back to Tuesday night at the State of the Union when Miss Elizabeth Warren is the one standing up and clapping for Trump when he's talking about limiting, and this was the funny part, congressional and senatorial trading of stocks. And so you've got the MAGA conservative president up there proposing stuff, right? That's like the one guy over here on the Spokane City Council. And you've got Elizabeth Warren, it's like the other girl, the socialist on the city council, who are actually agreeing on stuff. And we've got to a point now where the snake has devoured its tail so much in the political and partisan spectrum that that's where we're at. The most left-leaning and the most right-leaning are the only fucking ones who are making any sense.
It's a bizarro world, Nick.
Fuck!
It's absolutely bizarro and bonkers out there. I laugh to avoid crying sometimes. Look, I think we could probably get to the premium portion of the podcast unless you got anything else. People are getting their money's worth today. I know we were out last week, so I felt like we owed you a more in-depth podcast than we typically get into. But hey, you have anything else for the non-premium portion of the podcast there, Nick?
No, that was pretty good. That was cathartic.
I do want to say while I was in Costa Rica, Team USA and the Canadian hockey team, the game was on in the morning, and I'm not even a hockey fan, man, but look, hell of a game, and congrats to Team USA. Well done. Nice to just be American and proud and put all the other stuff to the side. There were some of my Canadian friends were in Costa Rica there as well, and they were, of course, devastated, but hell of a game, hell of a effort, and congrats to Team USA on both
the men's sides, yeah.
And the women's side, because they played their behinds off as well. So salute to both teams there. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast. See you next week, folks. I am Gerardo Del Real, along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 354th episode of our weekly therapy session, Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everybody. Bargains abound. Go get them. They're not going to last very long, folks. Take care.
See ya.